Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Viewpoints podcast series here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel with my colleague Burkhard Varnholt. Burkhard, great to be with you as always. I hope you're doing well.
Well, thanks for having me, Dan. Doing very well indeed. Thank you.
Oh, glad to hear, Burkhard. And I know in our podcasts this year, we have been traveling the world quite extensively, and I would like to maintain our global perspective for today's conversation, if that works for you, because I noted that you recently wrote a Viewpoints letter called The Great Rotation, which I think highlights how market activity and performance has started to shift from the U.S. to the rest of the world this year. So could you explain the gist of that for us?
With pleasure, then. In fact, the question of whether there's a global rotation or not, interestingly enough, and that in itself is a relevant observation, I think, has actually been front and center in a growing number of client calls I had recently. Look, the way I think about this is equally short-term and long-term. So let me start with the long-term view. If you look at long cycles, it seems to me that every decade chooses its own leader. Here's how I think about it. Go to the 1990s, and the undisputed market leader back in the 1990s was clearly Japan, the country of the rising sun, whose Nikkei index quadrupled and then peaked in 1990. But then, of course, the bubble burst and the lost decades followed. Fast forward then to the 1990s. During the 1990s, interestingly, Europe outperformed both the U.S. and the rest of the world. Those days, Europe was an internet, a communications, and a tech pioneer. It commanded a powerful industrial base, and it benefited from the end of the Cold War more than any other continent. But as usual, its leadership ended when the dot-com euphoria turned into a bubble which inevitably crashed. Then, in the millennium years after the dot-com bubble had crashed, the BRICS theme really sold like sliced bread. You and me will remember very well. China, as you remember, had just joined the WTO, the World Trade Organization, in 2001. And there was a global belief in a more peaceful, rules-based period of globalization that would lift the BRICS more than others and be supported by some socio-economic and demographic tipping point. That boom, of course, also came to nothing when the global financial crisis hit in 2007 and global emerging markets were hit harder than others. And finally, from the global great financial crisis, no market emerged stronger than the U.S. market. The U.S. had ruthlessly restructured its financial system, and its markets were clearly lifted by the business acumen and the innovation power out of Silicon Valley and its tech sector. And as U.S. markets have clearly led the world for the past 17-odd years or so, their valuations are arguably extended today. And so while we continue to firmly believe in U.S. exceptionalism powering our roaring 20 scenario, I think it stands to reason that the rest of the world has become so cheap relative to U.S. valuations that momentum could swing the other way. And that could be a big theme for 2025, even though it's still early days.
So, Burkhard, that's interesting. You think this year's outperformance of European and China stocks could go higher for longer?
I think that's it. I mean, look, let's just look at a few numbers. Since the start of the year, Europe is up about 12, 13, sometimes 14%. China's up 18%. Interestingly, even the Nasdaq Golden Dragon Index is up 18% year-to-date, while the Nasdaq 100 is, of course, up only 2%. For the last 12 months, the Hang Seng Tech Index is up 73%, outperforming every other tech index in the world. Or take a different example, when U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance delivered his powerful speech at the Munich Security Conference just recently, you could literally watch how European defense shares surged. They're now up 20% year-to-date, while their U.S. rivals are on average down about 10%. That's a big rotation in just one sector. And arguably, these markets still have room to run. European and Chinese equity valuations a double digit on average, double digit below their historical norms, and between 20 to 40% below U.S. peers. Take another example, BYD. That's China's biggest car company. They've recently overtaken Tesla in terms of e-cars sold, also overtaken them in terms of revenues and profits, yet its valuation remains less than a fifth of Tesla's valuation. Look, I'm no expert on cars, surely, but I just point to the scale of the difference in valuations and market capitalization to illustrate that there's possibly still room to run. And what's more, as I pointed out before, history suggests that such rotations can take a momentum of their own. That's why these developments are so important. They start small until they defy the skeptics and can become important market themes which no professional investor can afford to miss.
Well, Burkhard, that's very fascinating and potentially a very bold idea, of course, bearing in mind that time will tell if and how this all plays out. What should investors do today to position for this?
I think there are three simple things that every investor, private or professional, should take away from just looking at the first 2 months of this year. The first one is never underestimate the power of global diversification. In fact, it's still the only free lunch, proverbially speaking, that I am aware of. Two, always remember tipping points. They do exist. They create momentum in markets. And, you know, when the tide turns, things can move very quickly, and a new wave can lift many boats. And three, I'd argue, investors should observe valuations carefully. Most of the time, valuations do not move markets, but sometimes they do. And that's when markets are either extremely cheap or extremely expensive. Judging whether you're faced with such an extreme ain't easy, of course, but these days, the valuation argument has a rising number of followers. That's what I would point out.
Well, Burkhard, thank you again for that valuable food for thought. It is great to hear your outside in perspective when Wall Street, like all markets, has a natural bias to emphasize its own home market. So, Burkhard, thank you again for dropping by, spending some time today with our listeners. As always, do look forward to our next conversation. And until then, stay well and have a great rest of your day.
Well, and thanks to you, Dan, as always. Great pleasure. Looking forward to reconnecting next time soon. Bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.